so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, fun times today. Another edition of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. We're taping this on a Wednesday, which for Kolsky, a member of the Chosen People, is a day off.
Yeah.
I feel
don't call it a day off. What's that? I don't think that's...
Sorry.
It's a day off from food.
and work.
Yeah. Well, yes, but it's not a day off from work, although... my company did force me to take a vacation day to observe the highest and holiest of my holidays.
That would be a personal day per company policy, I believe, a personal day.
Oh, interesting. The local HR person is unaware of that, so I'll have to look into that when I get back to work tomorrow. I do a couple of things to stay Jewish, if you will.
Is that like staying golden?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's probably in some ways it has a little bit of the deathbed confession going on, you know, like I'm just going to give these couple of nods to Judaism every year just in case. But more it's in all honesty, it's really just my grandfather I don't know if devout is the right word, but it mattered to him. And observing Jewish holidays mattered a lot to him. And, sort of my dad, who is not very religious at all and didn't raise us particularly religious. I mean, I had a bar mitzvah, so I'm pretty Jewish, but.
Yeah, you're more Jew than I then at that point.
Yes, but yeah. I was not like browbeaten into specific beliefs or, you know. I stopped going to temple many, many years ago, and I don't know when the last time my parents went even, although they did, you know, take us as kids. So just not a very religious family, but out of respect to my dead grandfather and my living father, I fast on Yom Kippur, and I observe Passover to the best of my abilities.
So I do
the food stuff.
Gotcha.
In other words. But I will say I feel compelled to take the day off of work because you don't realize it now at 1 o'clock Pacific time, but by like 4 o'clock Pacific time, I'm going to be a little dizzy and unhappy and like not a very good listener or speaker. So my ability to do my job while fasting on Yom Kippur is severely compromised.
Yeah, I do not function well when hungry, so I get that totally. And, you know, I was going to say we had sort of a free-flowing prep for this podcast. We do like 5 minutes of prep usually. Today was a little longer.
I have us at 14 minutes of prep today.
Yeah, it's crazy. but like,
it's too much. If the podcast is bad, that's why.
There you go. So we'll blame that on that and the hunger and God.
Yes.
So you're in the Bay Area today. How is the mood after last night?
It's interesting. You know, I haven't really been out since last night to like poll the people on the street, but just judging from Twitter, I would say it is a pleasant split between, you know, crushed sports fans as one does, and people saying things like, you know what? Bummer the even year thing is over, but these guys battled further than they even should have, and the Cubs are clearly the better baseball team. I mean, anyone who watched that series knows somewhere in their heart that the Cubs are significantly better
and definitely more complete.
Yeah, they're just a better team. They're just better. And it's partly – it's because they're more complete, especially in the bullpen. And that was what ultimately decided last night's decisive game was the Giants didn't have the bullpen to lock it down. And this is what happens. And we watch this – people who watch the Giants as I did every day for work, realized that even as the bullpen seemed to clean up a little bit down the stretch of the regular season, this was the first year where they didn't have a ninth inning answer, a specific exact ninth inning answer. And we watched Bruce Bochy, a manager known for his bullpen managing acumen, search and struggle with that bullpen down the stretch of the regular season. And again, ultimately, that's what he had to do last night, and that's why they lost.
I don't want to get into too Giants-specific a conversation, because I think, as we'll touch about when we get to larger baseball stuff, you know, if you're not a Giants fan, you really don't care.
Story.
But – you know, the Cubs are a team that was in a similar predicament at one point in this year, and then they went out and got Aroldis Chapman. The Giants are a team that has been raking in cash, has great attendance, can afford a payroll thing. Is there any sense of like...
And they're also a team that has, in those World Series years, gone out and made deals down the stretch that were critical to the team.
Yeah, so is there any sense of what happened there with the front office?
Well, no. Well, there may be, but there shouldn't be, because the sorts of deals they made in the World Series years were not Aroldis Chapman. They were Will Smith and Eduardo Nunez,
yeah,
and Matt Moore. And so they made moves, and they made – again, you can say, well, they should have given up better prospects to get something better out there. But there was no there should not have been any reasonable expectation that they would do that, because even in their most successful times, they've specifically not traded away their favorite prospects, which is why you have Buster Posey and Joe Panic and Brandon Crawford and Brandon Belt and Ty Block, who was a rookie this year and came up in September and looked really good and even pitched well in the playoffs. Like, they have the guys that they decided were their favorite prospects, they never traded. And that was why they ended up trading for Cody Ross or Pat Burrell or right. Marco Scudero instead of bigger names in those years. And in those years, those players won them World Series.
Yeah, got and ridiculously year, hot at weird times. And yeah.
Exactly. And this year it was Connor Gillespie, who wasn't a trade deadline acquisition, but Matt Moore, who was excellent last night. And Will Smith, who was... has been really good throughout the playoffs. It just it was not enough.
I'll tell you, as a fan of another team, one that was certainly victimized by the Giants a couple times during the even year foibles, they just do seem hard to kill. That's one of the things you notice about them. You notice that the prospects they like, often not all that heralded, Posey, you know, being the exception, tend to pan out. And that they just are really hard to kill, and I think even Cubs fans really saw that in this series, right? Like, you know, they didn't have the better team, but there were definitely moments where they would put the fear of Billy Goats back into you. You know what I mean?
No question, and that's what this team does, and so it didn't happen this year, but you know, if you're not an idiot, you realize the even year thing is really just coincidence, and. The Giants will go into next year once again. I can tell you exactly what they're going to do. They're going to have an offseason where they make a couple of moves, but none of them are particularly overwhelming or exciting. And everyone's going to say, oh, maybe they're a player short going into the regular season. And then they're going to compete all year, be around the top of the division, make a move near the deadline. They'll either have a wild card spot or win the division. And then we'll be having the same conversation next September that – well, they're not the most talented team, but nobody really wants to play these guys. It's the same. And I think Giants fans, at least a decent portion of them, realize that and realize how good of a situation that is relative to the possibilities. And I think people are okay right now.
Yeah, three World Series will do that to you.
Say again?
Three World Series titles will do that to you.
Exactly. It's not complacency, but it's reasonable satisfaction.
Yeah. Has anyone noticed that the Giants blew a 3-1 lead in the game and Draymond threw out the first pitch?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that joke's been made.
It's not just a joke. It's true.
I'm sure that's been noted. We made jokes about that before the game. Someone tweeted something about that. before the game yesterday, to, you know, when I was on the radio. It's God, poor Draymond.
I know.
But also not poor Draymond, because they're going to win a title. So
yeah. All right. So, you know, we obviously, you've been pretty enthralled in the playoff baseball, and we were talking earlier this week about it. In your mind, the playoff baseball vastly superior to regular baseball, no?
Yeah. What do you mean, in my mind?
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a different position on this. But
are
Yeah.
How are you going to take a position that playoff baseball is not more exciting than regular season baseball?
Well, all right. How are you defining more exciting? Of course, by its very definition, it means more. You know, look, there's any baseball regular season game is one of 162, and that just is what is. So, you know, if you're talking about fixing that, I mean, I guess you could make it a 20-game season, but that's obviously not going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, so,
well, I know you're not going to make it a 20-game season, but I think you have to shorten the season.
But, I mean, look, in terms of what we're talking about for shortening the season, if they went back to 154, if they went to 148 or whatever, that's not really going to make a difference in terms of what we're talking about. So, yeah, look, are there inherently more stakes? Yes, but is the game itself, the things that are happening, more exciting? I would say no. And the biggest reason I would say that is because the playoffs take forever.
Well, I agree with that. They add a minute to every commercial break. Did you know that?
I do know that. And on top of that, all of the you know, time wasting stuff that they deal with during the regular season completely goes out the window. Like, the time between pitches can be interminable to the point where, you know, I'm watching these games, but I have stuff that we want to watch to talk about. And like, so I'm like, all right, well, I guess I got to get Luke Cage in, and I'll watch an hour of Luke Cage. I'll come back and it'll be like an inning and a half later. And I, you know, it's, you know, so that part of it, I think, is
of course you must realize the move is to pause the baseball game. And skip through it.
If I had an unlimited amount of time to hang out and watch TV all night, that would be the move. But I don't, you know. So
what else do you have to do? Come on,
like, go to bed at some point. Yeah. So yeah, the games take forever. That's a big problem. And I would say it's not so much that, you know, because I don't want to get on playoff baseball sucks. It doesn't. I'm not saying that.
It's the
regular season, you know, there are all these qualities about the regular season that are, it's kind of like, hey, it's this thing that's there for you every night. You can kind of hang out and watch a game and do other stuff. And, you know, it's sort of your background friend. And
that's the thing. It's a background sport. But in the playoffs, it's not a background sport.
It's sort of meant to be a background sport. That's kind of what I feel like. And you know, I mean, like, we talked a little bit in this discussion about, you know, earlier in the year about baseball and how we're sort of watching less of it. And I think a lot of that is the regionalism of it. And, you know, because if you look at, like, local television ratings, like the RSN, the you know, the Comcast Sports Nets and the Fox Sports Norths of the world, baseball ratings are doing better than ever before. Like, baseball's the number one primetime thing in, like, 20 markets right now. So
yeah, I think because it is that thing that people just put on the TV.
Yeah,
go about their night.
It's not like the regular season is unhealthy when it's a thing that you're interested in. But that's the problem. As a person who's, you know, team finished in last place, you know, like, my only interest is that I hate the Nats and I'm running a team to hate.
Maybe it really,
you know what I mean?
Maybe it really does just come down to, this is the destiny of baseball, is to be a local background.
Kind of. I mean, television. To me,
it essentially becomes, and I only mean this to sound probably half as insulting as it will, it's essentially become the Christmas Yule Log channel.
Yeah, kind of.
It's a thing that you put your team on while you go about your night. And do your laundry or cook dinner or whatever it is, and you're vaguely interested and you hope your team does well, and maybe you rewind quickly on the DVR to rewatch a home run, but like, you don't really care all that much to sit down and watch it.
It's the summertime Yule Log.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. And you know, if that – maybe that's not the worst thing, and maybe baseball just has to figure out how to monetize that model specifically. Look, and then you make the playoffs as national as you can. And I think, again, the stakes are so high. It's not unlike the Stanley Cup playoffs where when there's 82 regular season games, yeah, there's only five goals or whatever, but who cares because there's another game tomorrow. When you're playing for your playoff life, every pitch, every run, every power play, every shot matters so much.
Let me ask you, how excited are you about the prospect of a Cleveland-Toronto American League Championship Series?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't care.
So it's like, and I think ultimately that's baseball's problem. Not just that, you know, Cleveland can play Toronto, and because you just really have not much to hang your hat on emotionally for either of those teams. That's a thing.
I hate Cleveland.
And I would say the other issue.
Probably the team I hate the most, so I would root hard for Toronto.
Is that I think like most casual American sports fans don't really know who Corey Seager and Francisco Lindor are.
Corey Seager?
Yeah. Isn't that his name?
Isn't that the one on the Dodgers?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, there are teams left in this postseason.
About, I thought you were talking about someone on Cleveland. Okay,
with
yeah,
emerging young – well, Lindor's on Cleveland, right?
Right. Yeah. No, I know, but that – yeah, I get
with
it.
Emerging young stars. I mean, I think people now know who Bryce Harper is, but like casual people know who Bryce Harper is. But I don't know that enough casual people know who Bryce Harper is. You know what I mean?
I don't know that enough. Yeah, I don't know that enough do either. Like, and just, I would say – with the Giants out, and it's nothing special for them other than that they've been there over and over again. People have started to get to know like a Madison Bumgarner and a Hunter Pence and Buster Posey. But other than the Giants, I mean, you look at the Cubs. Who does – like Javier Baez was the star of that series. No one knows who Javier Baez is.
I don't
is.
Know that many people know who Chris Bryan is. And this
well,
guy –
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
and he's going to be the MVP.
Yeah.
So, you know, like people Cubs might know are, John Lester, yeah. I guess, right?
The Cubs are stars just like the Cubs
Joe
thing is a star. You know what I mean? Like
Joe
1908 is
Joe
the star. Madden. You know what I mean? Wrigley Field is the star of the Cubs. And so
– hey, look, they've been selling that place out with that star for 20 years.
Yeah,
so
yeah. But I mean, like, so people will be excited to watch the Cubs. Like, rent, you know, people
yes.
who with no vested interest will be excited to watch the Cubs because they want to
see
if they can
but do that's
it.
Kind of my point is even with that, people still don't know who the hell they are for the most part, I don't think.
And I think ultimately that's going to be a problem for baseball long term as it tries to keep pace, you know,
well,
with the NBA that manufactures stars seemingly at will and football that just doesn't need it.
But isn't that the problem with the, like, the concept of just becoming the summertime Yule log and this local thing is even baseball fans won't know anybody but the absolute
yeah.
biggest stars.
You know the guys in your town, the
right.
absolute biggest stars, and
right.
and then it falls away off
the
from
division.
There. Yeah.
Some guys in the division you see
because you see 19 times. Yeah, you have a pretty
right.
good idea who the five teams in your division have. And that's – yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like that. We didn't plan to talk about this, and maybe this is a thing for another podcast. But do you feel like the drop in NFL ratings this year? They're down about 10% for those who haven't heard. Like, is that a thing?
Do you make much
of that?
Not really.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see more of it before I get too riled up about it.
Yeah,
but the numbers aren't down across the board for the first time in
well
a while.
But it's sort of like I would think about like Apple stock. If I had a bunch of Apple stock,
let's get a bunch of Apple stock. How do we do that?
I think it's too late for that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But that's my point, is like if I bought my Apple stock 20 years ago, I'm not super concerned about a 10% drop today.
Yeah, 10% is a pretty healthy percent. Keep in mind
it is.
The whole
it is.
Economics of that game are predicated upon the massive TV ratings that they get. So
yeah, but don't you think like a 10% drop, as massive as the audience is, could be explained by pretty simple things like people streaming and going to bars or whatever?
I think it like, can be explained by the election and people just being a little interested in other things for a while. Yeah,
that,
it's possible.
There's that. What about this? Do you know? You know, they're offering for the first time. DirecTV is offering an online streaming.
Yeah, but it's very specific conditions that you have to be able, basically, not to have access to DirecTV or be a student.
Have
a streaming only package.
That's not true. pretty much anyone who lives in an apartment or a place with roommates can pull it off.
Mm. All right.
And so I am assuming those TV ratings do not take any streaming into account.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the Sunday Ticket is like 5% of the total. Like, people who have the Sunday Ticket is like 5% of the total TV viewing audience. So, it's not a massive – you're not – even people who would be streaming it online that weren't before, that's not going to be a massive number, I don't think. Anyway, we can get into that another day because we got some TV we want to talk about, right?
Indeed.
So you assigned Marvel's Luke Cage, for homework. I'll ask just off the bat, what was your motivation for feeling like, Madden, you got to see this one?
Well, I think it's, as superhero shows go, first of all, like, at any given time, a goal of mine is to get you to watch superhero-y stuff. Not necessarily for any reason other than I want to talk about it because I friggin' watch all of it.
Oh, so it's not – you're not trolling me.
I'm not trolling you.
Okay. It felt a little bit like you might be trolling me.
No. No. I don't want to make you watch bad superhero stuff. But, okay. So Luke Cage specifically, beyond that though, I think it's different than almost any other show on TV in a lot of ways, and definitely different than – any superhero show. I think it was well acted and well conceived, and also just for the fact that now I guess you could put Atlanta sort of in this category, and certainly I've heard Power is pretty good and very, very black, but it's about the blackest television show I've ever seen, just in terms of who's on it, the stuff that's talked about, the issues that are not discussed but portrayed.
How many now? When you say that, how many episodes in are you?
5 or 6.
Okay, because I only watched the pilot, and it wasn't like there weren't black issues that were discussed, but a lot of them were about who's going to coach the Knicks. So
Well, that's not black issues. That was like a barbershop conversation that opened the show.
Yes, but it was also like a very like, we're in a barbershop and we're having a barbershop conversation. Black America, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, but I think that's the narrow view of what happened there, given the rest of the rest of
right.
The
now you've seen a little more. Like I said, you fleshed it out some, so I'm It does, and look, I'm not here to bury the show. I think it was pretty well made, and I think it was pretty well acted. It was at least, I only watched the one, and pilots tend to be this way, but it was a little heavy-handed, I feel like.
Yeah, sure.
A lot of times. And this is a thing with superhero shows where you're painting this world that is almost Trumpian in it, you know what I mean? In terms of like, you want to paint as dire a portrait of this world, as desperate, it really is, it's truly a disaster, Big League Truth. But at the same time, because it's a comic book, there's something fantastical about it at the same time. And it just, where like there's like this kind of like, magic sheen over that sort of grittiness or tough reality. And I feel like I'd rather see something real half the time. I just hunger for more that's real. And it's just hard for me to have an emotional connection with a guy that, takes a gun out of somebody's hand and takes a gunshot and bends the gun back and gives back the bullet. You know what I mean? Like, I just...
Right. I get it. It's
leaves me cold.
It's your superhero. It's your anti-superhero bias. But I'm not going to argue with you about the sheen. There's a sheen. The sheen is there. Not Charlie, but like a gloss over the entire...
Right? I mean, it's like it's gritty, but it's not. Part of it.
It's yes, no, that's true. That's part of what happens. But yeah, I'm big on like expectation management and trying to view things within context. And for me, yeah, it's a superhero show. And fundamentally, there are superhero-y things and some tropes that are involved. But I think given those parameters, because it's made by a guy who's a big comic guy. But it's also made by a guy who's thoughtful, and I think it goes – although it has that gloss on it, it goes deeper and thinks harder than a lot of superhero stuff.
Yeah. I look
– it's not just your standard – oh, this power, how, you know, what are my moral obligations? And then like, oh, well, I'll just kill all the bad guys. It's not just that.
It's, you know, it's not Supergirl. I'm not saying that it's trash because I, you know, the guy that plays Luke Cage is great.
He's great.
Lots of really good and his real charming presence.
And no one's ever been more convincingly bulletproof than that dude.
Yeah. You know, you got some Wire veterans in there. You got some House of Cards veterans in there. You got Alfred Woodard. Like, you know, this is a pro production.
Yeah, you got the dude from isn't it the dude from Mr. Robot? The guy who's playing chess. I guess he hasn't really been much of a character yet.
Yeah, I hadn't got to that part yet. I just feel like, to me, this is like it's a peak TV thing. And I feel like a show like this, like, yeah, like if you're into this, I would recommend watching it. For me, it's a lot like the show that it spun off from, Jessica Jones, where it was like when there was a point where I felt like I'd sort of watched all the stuff and I was like, I'll give this a run. And then I wound up watching 20 of them and that's fine. And maybe I'll watch season two and maybe I won't. And I could definitely see myself coming and watching some Luke Cage's at a point like that.
Right.
But like right now, when my DVR is backed up and I haven't even started Narcos and Transparent, I'm like, God, I'm giving hours to this, you know? I don't know. That's where I landed.
Yeah, that doesn't entirely surprise me.
Yeah, I guess I can be predictable in that way. I feel like I'm going to take some predictable Derek positions in this podcast. I'm not going to lie. You may see me coming.
It's predictable only in that we have laid out your anti-superhero bias, and there's a lot of good television. I think everybody struggles with priorities, right?
Yes.
I finally, after 3 years of trying, quit Once Upon a Time this year just because I finally ran out of time.
That's just it for us. We may have to get better at quitting.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, I mean – I don't think that this is very representative just because Once Upon a Time is just truly one of the worst shows ever. and my attachment and addiction to it was nothing but a sickness. So I don't know how representative that is of my actual abilities to quit things that I have any real interest in whatsoever.
I may have to just like stop watching Showtime shows altogether.
Oh, man.
They have a tendency, you know, to go a little bit maybe past the expiration date.
What Showtime shows do you have in mind when you say this?
Well, I mean, I just mean because, well, when I say that, I mean, you know, there's a ton of them. Homeland, Dexter, Californication, all went on way too long. But like,
yeah,
what I'm
true.
Thinking of right now is I have all this stuff, but I'm definitely going to be making time to watch Master of Sex and Shameless. So,
oh yeah. Like, yeah, I never watched either.
You know what I mean?
My dad loves Shameless,
and my dad loves Shameless too. Maybe Shameless is the program of dads. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, that's weird. Speaking of which, can I share? I know we already are way off the Cubs thing.
Yeah,
but just because my dad came up, and I've just been wanting to share this somewhere, and it hasn't really been appropriate on the radio in San Francisco, but. My sister, this is a weird story that has no place. It's a complete non sequitur and I apologize. My sister is dating a guy who's a big Knicks fan, and this is really just insight into my father and how I became the person that I am. But my father, for, I don't know, his birthday or something, gave him a Derrick Rose Knicks jersey. And, you know, my family has been in Chicago for most of my life. And my sister's boyfriend, being the nice gentleman that he is, sent an email to my parents saying, I just wanted to say thank you for the wonderful gift. I really appreciate the gesture. Can't wait to wear it. Looking forward to hearing more about your trip. Whatever, they were just on a trip. And my father's response reads as follows. Our pleasure. We were so happy to unload D Rose that the jersey is the least we can do. Enjoy. You'll probably wear it at more Knicks games than he will.
Man. And that's before he might have been going to prison, I'm guessing, right?
Boy. He's definitely not going to prison because it's not a criminal trial, but
my bad.
He may or may not be the biggest scumbag in the world.
You saw right today that the lead investigator in that case was murdered, right?
What? No.
Oh yeah, LA Times reporting.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, so that's which is also why I thought it was a criminal case. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but I'm pretty sure.
I haven't seen any news today, but I do know that it's a civil case because that's one of the big Derrick Rose defense arguments is this is something that happened 2 years ago and never really investigated and certainly not pursued as a criminal offense at all. And now 2 years later she's got a criminal trial going. But I don't want to get it. That is definitely not toy department material.
No, let's get the hell out of there. Where should we bounce to? We are talking about new shows.
Let's go from my homework for you to your homework for me, because I think one thing we can say clearly is that I am a better student and do my homework better than you do.
How is that?
With more enthusiasm and vigor and commitment and time.
Why isn't it that I just gave better homework than you did?
Well, I don't think we're not talking about that right now, okay. Mr. Trump. We're right, talking about fine. The fact that you only watched 1 hour of the thing I gave to you, and I voraciously consumed every piece of what of the show you mentioned within like an 18-hour span. So,
did you not say specifically I only needed to watch 1 hour of Luke Cage?
No, I know. I'm okay. Just giving you crap. Come on, okay. I
did actually watch another 20 minutes. Sorry.
Black Mirror, though, for real, was – oh, my God.
It's amazing, right?
No, it's amazing, and I don't know whether or how to recommend it because, like, I'll just describe my experience with Black Mirror. So we were watching me and a roommate and another buddy were at my house in my living room watching the Giants playoff game on Saturday. And the game ended, and I was like, all right, chill Saturday night. I'm going to go watch Black Mirror because Derek assigned me Black Mirror to watch as homework. And my roommate was like, oh, man, I watched a couple episodes of that like a year or two ago, and it was amazing. And my other buddy was like, oh, I don't even know what that is. And they were like, oh, well, you guys want to watch one? Yeah, let's watch one. And so it's like 8 or 9 p.m. at that point. And this was Friday, not Saturday. So Friday night, the Friday night Cubs game, the first Cubs-Giants game. And so they're like, all right, yeah, let's watch one. And so we pulled up on Netflix and we watched the first one. And we're all like, oh, my God, WTF, OMG. And like, are kind of like disoriented and confused and like upset's not the right word, but certainly disturbed at least a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But also like, we're like talking about the scenario that I don't know if we're going to spoil it or not, but we're talking about the crazy thing that happens and like what the right thing to do is, what we would do, all this. It was crazy, right? And mm-hmm. then so we talk about it for like 20 minutes and then we're like, well, I guess we better watch another one of those. And so then the second one was like even – God, I don't even – it was completely also crazy in a totally different and confusing way.
The
and
second just one, as, just I'm trying to remember the order. Is that the one?
That's the bikes.
The bikes. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's maybe more confusing and a little less upsetting, but also totally unsatisfying. And so then, like, we were like, we have another 20-minute conversation. We agree that we absolutely cannot watch another one of these things. And we're like, okay, cool. Right? And then so I go upstairs to my room, and I watched something, like a 30-minute something, like, light and funny, you know? And in, all throughout it and after it, I'm still thinking about friggin' Black Mirror. And I'm like, you know what? The first season is only 3 episodes long. I'll just watch the third episode and knock out the season and then be done with it.
And that's like the recorded memories one, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the memory rewind, which I think in the final analysis is the most screwed up mind you know what of all time of any of them. And so naturally after I watched that, and now it's like 1 a.m. or something, or at least midnight, I'm like, well, I certainly can't go to sleep after that.
You did send me a text in the middle of that third one.
I sent some really pretty crazy texts throughout this entire thing, I think. And then, like, because now it's the middle of the night, and I'm by myself awake in my house, basically, and, like, watching this madness. And so then, like, I was pretty awake after that and like, maybe played a video game for, like, 20 minutes or so. But again, like, I just couldn't shake it. And I was like, well, I guess I better just dive into season 2 here. And, you know, so on and on with more or less the same thing until I finished those 3 episodes. And now it's like 4 a.m. And I – at this point, I was like, all right, well, this is madness. I have to go to sleep. But not before I make sure I can, like, have the Christmas thing on hand. So I woke up the next day and watched the Christmas thing. and altogether, it's like – I've never simultaneously enjoyed and been unsatisfied by something so completely. Like and I would say, by the way, if you're short on time, you can skip the Christmas special. It's the least.
Yeah, it is.
Especially after watching the 6 regular ones, it's the least like dynamic of them. Although the acting talent is phenomenal.
The acting talent is great throughout, though. Like you, there are a lot of people that you realize like pop up in other things as you go. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, I know her from this thing and him from that thing, and really just people I'd never heard of or seen that were awesome. But overall, just in general, it's the most thought provoking, but also it truly is not. It's truly unsatisfying.
Unsettling, you know what I mean?
Yes, but there's like they don't exactly all take place in a different world, but they all take place in their own sort of confined set of circumstances that are pretty well specified to a degree, but not necessarily explained or put in any real context that you can understand.
It's a world, and I, you know, we sort of talked about this when I was setting up the show. That's like it's basically like ours, typically with some slight technological advances, but it's always close enough, and the advances are always close enough to things that we're sort of doing already that you can very much imagine them. You could imagine this happening someday.
Yeah. At least to some level, right? Like some of the stuff is pretty out there.
Yeah,
but
like
also,
the bike world obviously is a little bit different, but it definitely has echoes of things that exist in our current
world.
Exactly.
It doesn't seem so – all the sort of setup scenarios seem reachable. Like for some of them, some pretty nasty stuff would have to happen for us to get there, but – they seem reachable, and some of them seem like they could happen in a month.
Yeah, and you look at like the political echoes. Like, I mean, the first episode, there's a feature of which is prominently involved actually wound up happening to the British Prime Minister in a way. So, that was a thing, and there's an episode with a sort of a that has kind of a more political bent. that certainly has echoes of what we're seeing in politics now, you know? So
that episode was described to me as like get ready for something vaguely Trumpian. And I have to say, although I clearly was not expecting exactly what I got, the echoes of our political climate are undeniable.
Right. And keep in mind, I watched that episode before, you know, Trump was a thing. So
right. Yeah, right. It was made before Trump was a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it is prescient in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's not easy. I'm impressed that you wound up binging it. I specifically said it could be a tough show to binge because those episodes stay with you.
All of them are still with me.
Yeah.
I'm still – again, except the Christmas episode was a little easier to see coming in some ways and also – It just felt more derivative of the other six, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's the kind of show, you know, we're not going to be able to do it here. Like, I want to have, you know, 17 offline conversations with you about these individual episodes at some point. And that's – I don't know. It's rare. It's rare to find that, right?
Yeah. Even our favorite shows – you know, Atlanta is an exception because I have found myself at work really talking about Atlanta. But even like Game of Thrones, you go to work, you go out, and people have all watched it, and you talk about like, oh man, Robb Stark got murdered,
right?
But like, you don't have deep, thoughtful conversations about it.
Yeah, it's all what happened. What was your favorite thing that happened, and what do you think is going to happen next? That's just kind of as far as it goes.
Right.
This is little bit more like, what would you do? Or what does this mean for us, you know?
That was the part that stood out the most because I've watched Game of Thrones episodes with those same dudes. And afterwards, it's like, oh, man, that was awesome. All right, see you later. Yeah. And this was like, dude. This was like, whoa, hold up a second. But what if and even though there is like this unsettling, unsatisfying thing about it that is usually something I'm not super excited to feel – the thoughtfulness and the weird philosophical dilemmas presented were 100% worth it. I mean, I would say it's a must watch.
Yeah. And look, we do talk about things and sometimes, you know, one of my favorite things about something I really like would be like, there's nothing like this, but there really isn't much like this.
No, I mean, the Twilight Zone is really the only relevant comparison, I think. And although the like broad plan of the show might have some similarities, like the show itself is not very similar to that.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask, you know, if you were listening to this at home and you know, some of you hopefully are doing homework along with us, but if you haven't jumped into these shows, I'm going to ask you to, there's only six, you know, give yourself a little time because you might not want to watch them all in one night. But check them out.
I do not necessarily recommend that.
Because yeah. I will say again that there is another new batch coming to Netflix really soon. And I'm definitely planning for us to talk about them. So,
yeah. And maybe when those come out, we could do our three favorite philosophical quandaries from the original six to set up the new ones.
You know? All right. Yeah, I like the idea.
Because I don't want to spoil it now in case people do want to watch it. You like, they're the sort of things that to talk about them, you have to ruin it.
Yeah.
So people should watch those. Watch those six before the three come out, and then we'll talk about it more.
I really do. I just think it's great, and I'm very happy that you jumped right in. So
yeah.
Yay. All right. we have a couple more things to cover, right? We didn't get to Insecure.
No. Yeah. Let's do Insecure. And then I have a couple of things to bring up.
Okay. So Insecure, the latest show on HBO dropped two new shows this week. You didn't watch Sarah Jessica Parker's divorce show, did you?
No, although I would call it Thomas Hayden Church's divorce show. But I here's my position. I didn't watch like Blue Valentine. I didn't watch like Revolution Road or whatever that one was called. I didn't watch The Affair, and I don't think I'm going to watch The Divorce unless people really tell me it's like unmissable, because I'm not that interested in watching people slowly be miserable.
I watched all those things and I'm going to check this out. And You're right. I probably should have credited Thomas Hayden Church, because I think if there's anything that's going to save it, it's going to be his like dry ass sense of humor.
Right. You're not going to watch it for Sarah Jessica Parker's performance. No shade. I'm sure she's fine. You're going to watch it because you're hoping Thomas Hayden Church brings something you're not expecting. Yep. Because I can't see how you would expect anything but like a miserable slog from that show.
Yeah, dark comedy. I like dark comedy. But all right, we're not here to talk about Divorce. We're going to talk about Insecure, which I thought was delightful. I was looking forward to this one a lot. But I really enjoyed Issa Rae's presence in this show. And, it had a couple, I thought, of really funny moments. We talked about the rap. But I think Donald Trump would have really appreciated. We got all of Trump in this episode. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are we spoiling it? We should probably spoil it, right?
Yeah, we're going to spoil the pilot a little bit.
Okay.
No problem.
And it was also, to me, like very
– I mean, hold on. We're going to talk about the pilot in detail. I don't even know if I would say we're going to spoil the pilot. Like, it's funny and fun. We're not going to spoil it. We're just going to talk about it.
It's not like anything happens. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly, yeah.
But I really
there's no big spoilers, really.
Yeah, it's not like somebody gets murdered. But it was a world, having lived in LA, that was familiar to me. You know what I mean? Like, recognize some of the places that we're at, and it just felt real and lived in, and yet an experience. Another one of these experiences that was refreshing to see on television for once.
You know what, man? Like. So we've got Atlanta and this show both debuting within like a month or two of each other, and I think it's easy for people to write them off, or not write them off, but describe them as black whatever. Atlanta is black Louis, if you will. And this Insecure is black girls, and that response, which I have heard a lot, makes me think two different things. The first is, okay, why not? Because it turns out we don't get a lot of the black perspective in our mass media. And the fact that we're starting to is nothing but good, even if it was true that Insecure is just black girls. But the second response, which is probably the more real one, is what you learn from watching these shows is that, no, it's not black anything. It's a creative artist who happens to have experiences that might be particular to being black, but that's just her experience. It's no different than any show that's been created by an individual auteur that, mimics their life in some small way. It's reflecting a particular experience of a particular artist in a particular place. And what matters is that she's really good at it. And the way she articulates her experience is funny and engaging and entertaining. And I thought it was great. I thought it was great. And in many ways, for the sort of comedy that it is, because I think it's a pretty goofy comedy, it was really thoughtful and introspective. I just thought it was really wonderful.
I did too. I almost wish that it was maybe on somewhat away from Atlanta. Atlanta is just so great. It's going to suffer from comparisons
but it's a totally different thing. But that's kind of my point. Yeah. Is like lumping it in with Atlanta is. I mean, it's not quite racist, but it really is just a racial categorization that you're making.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm not. I wasn't saying that I would put it in that. But I think people tend they need to put things in boxes. You know what I mean?
No, I'm not saying you're being racist.
Right.
I'm saying it's a natural thing to do.
Right. They're going
to
put it in a box with girls, which would be, you know, not along racial lines. Or they'll put it in a box with Atlanta, which would be along racial lines. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to put it in a box.
Because it's girls because she's a lady in a city
and
doing, like, young lady things. And it's Atlanta because she's a black lady. And yeah, that's going to happen. But I don't think it's actually really very much like either of those shows.
No, it's different. I would agree. Although I think both that show and Atlanta are good at small moments, you know, which I think enhances the storytelling, and good about incorporating the specifics of their place as part of the character of the show.
Very true.
So, I mean, there's some commonalities, and I could see why people would make comparisons. But you're right. They're both good in their own way, and I think they're both worth watching. I say that, you know, we are not TV critics. We don't get screeners in advance. So I say that based on the pilot, but I did enjoy the pilot, and I am looking forward to seeing what else the show has to offer.
Right. I also don't know how many what comes next at all, but it's just another – to me, this is a great thing that's happening in television, and it's from Insecure to Atlanta to Broad City to, you know, all these different types of people with different experiences from different places are getting to – in their own sometimes bizarre way share their experience. And that's only good. There's only more and I'm not even talking about from like a social quality standpoint. I'm talking about as a viewer, from an entertainment standpoint. The more differing perspectives we get, the more different stories we get, the more different jokes we get, the less we have to watch the same trash over and over again. And I think everybody wins.
I agree. I'm glad that there are more things like this, and TV just continues to deepen. I think it's an area that, like, you know, people making movies feel like they can't tell stories that only reach a few people because the economics of it don't work.
Right.
And sort of the long tail of television is like saving the entertainment day. And I don't think it's an accident that we spend so much time talking about television and less time talking about movies and music. I think it's directly related to that.
I think it's directly related to the quality of those mediums. No question. Yeah. There's more interesting stuff being put out in television than anywhere else.
Agreed. I do want to jump really quick because I know you got some stuff you wanted to bring up. I did want to jump over to the world of music because I wanted to see Kanye this week.
Oh yeah,
have you been to any of the shows on the St. Pablo tour? Have you seen Kanye? Period.
I saw Kanye at Lollapalooza.
On what album would that have been?
It was 2008.
Okay. See, I feel like.
I only know that because I'm looking at a thing on my wall from that Lollapalooza.
I'm curious, what did you think of that performance?
It was good.
that's about what you remember. The reason I'm curious.
No, I mean, look, it was there's a lot of flashing lights and explosions, and he raps half of about every song he can, and then he talks about how great he is, and then he leaves.
Yeah. I feel like. I had this specific thought while watching the show was like, I feel like, man, I wish I was seeing him in 2008. And that is not like not the line that, like, it's not like the line in the song where it's like, I miss the old Kanye. Like, it's not, nothing to do with Kanye, you know, or who he is or what he's developed into as a person or as an artist. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm on the record on the show as being pretty into Kanye.
Yeah, we're all pro Kanye here.
I'm pro Kanye. I am a Kanye defender.
I think
Kanye
he's great.
Is, it, by and large, right about
genius.
A lot of things. I think he's a musical genius. I did not particularly enjoy this show. And
why?
A lot of it comes down to the setup. Have you heard any discussion of the Kanye stage setup on this tour?
Yeah, I've heard enough to know there's conversation, but not to know what it's about.
So he's got this like stage that basically floats out above the audience. You know, it's an arena show, and he's like sort of floating out over the middle of the hockey floor, if you will, in the arena.
Okay.
He's kind of suspended up there, maybe 30 feet above everybody, and there's sort of lights underneath the stage.
You have clearly become a Minnesotan because you just chose hockey floor as your above the hockey floor is where he was floating.
Well,
not the basketball. Yeah.
I think it's a little bit more because you can, in those types of places, you can typically see the boards. You know what I mean? You can see the seats.
You're from Minnesota now.
God. And in fairness, there was also in St. Paul where the hockey team plays and where the basketball team doesn't. Damn it. All right, fine. Whatever. I'm from Minnesota. So he's suspended above. There's kind of lights below him. Uh-huh. But you can't really see him all that much. And he's kind of bolted to this, like, literally, like, there's a thing on the back of his shirt that, you know, that goes down to, like, a chain to make sure that he doesn't fall off the thing. Because it kind of, like, you know.
Yeah.
And so it really limits a lot what he can do. You know what I mean? Right. He's kind of up there emoting. I'm making hand gestures now that you can't see. Uh-huh. And that's sort of it. And because of that, you know, because this is sort of the only stage, there's no band and, you know, there's I guess there's a guy being a DJ, but there's just a lot of like press play. And, you know, right. I'm excited for niggas in Paris just like anybody. But if you're just going to hit play on the Jay-Z verse and stand there a little bit and occasionally wave your arm around.
Yeah.
What am I getting out of the live experience? And now, I was clearly in the minority. Like, people loved this show. It was packed. People were going nuts. There was a really great response to the run of stuff from 808s, which made me happy because I love that record.
Really? You love that record?
I do, yeah.
Huh.
I probably need to go back and give it another spin.
And I saw lots of great shots from, like, underneath the stage that look really cool because there's a massive, massive dance party happening underneath, like, moshing and people jumping up and down. And, like, it does really strike you. And I know this is a well-worn point in our culture, but, like, the thing where the energy and excitement is happening in the live arena, like, you know – it was closer to going to rock shows in 1993 than anything I'd really been to in a while, from like the crowd enthusiasm, participation, just people sort of going nuts standpoint. You can tell that these people are the new rock and roll.
And you just saw Metallica.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I go to a lot of rock shows. And it's not like I don't see people getting excited or banging heads, but in a way, it's much more performative. Like, this is the thing that we do. I tell you, I went to see a hard rock band called Beartooth. You know what I mean? That's a little bit more underground. They played a sold out club show. And there was a lot of, like, it was a lot of young kids and it was a lot of, like, wild energy. They're kind of one of those, like, we're a little bit heavy, we're a little bit emo kind of band, so, like, you know, they got a very young fan base, but they're still doing all the same moves, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That you would see at a show in 2000 or that you'd see in a show in 1998 or 1993 or, you know, even 1988. Sure. Whereas this felt like it was kind of its own thing. I don't know. Uh-huh. Like, I definitely was like, oh man, this is definitely where the rebels are at, you know?
Right.
And right. You know, so as much as I was kind of left cold by it. I felt like I had really had a hard time connecting with Kanye. I could barely see him half the time.
You're talking – a lot of what you are talking about sounds to me like why I don't generally go to stadium shows.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, when you think about Kanye as an artist, you think about – there's a lot of things you think about, right? You think about him as kind of a provocateur, as a beat maker, as just a shit stirrer, if you will. But like, straight up MC is sort of at the back of the list, right? Like, we're just talking about rapper with rapping ability. You know what I mean?
He's pretty good, actually. But yeah, it's not his best skill.
And I think the show almost entirely put the emphasis on his rapping and singing. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, like, it was like, I don't know. It left me a little cold, and I was surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could tell, like, I like Kanye more than I liked the show even in 2008. So I'm not sure, you're missing that much time wise.
Well, I'd heard about all these things with like lights and spaceships and, you know.
Right. There was that. There were more pyrotechnics, and it was a big stage show at Lollapalooza. I mean, it was, you know, but, and he ran around the whole time, which is, you know, engaging. But, I mean, I think my concert stance is pretty well established. Like, I like to see a little more like originality in the actual music and artistry.
Yeah, I mean, there was zero. I shouldn't say zero, because there was one. I mean, you know what? There was mostly zero improvisation really happening. Right. And like I said, there was a lot of recorded tracks. If you're not right into that, it would have been, you would have had a tough time.
When I go see a hip hop show, I want to see a live DJ mixing things up. I want to see an MC that can really control the crowd, maybe even drop some freestyles in. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I want to see engagement in a deeper way than you get out of most shows like that. But that's why, you know, I've never seen like Jay-Z or like, I feel like I missed my chance to see those guys.
Yeah.
When they were still playing clubs.
Jay's doing live band stuff now mostly, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's still like, you got to go to like a place where you're a million miles away and like, you know, it's just, to me, it's not usually worth it.
Yeah. You know, I once saw Jay-Z and 311 at Shoreline.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was,
that's an interesting
a thing called the Sprite Liquid Mix Tour. And it was like a bunch of like rap and rock bands thrown together.
Oh, my God. That sounds so very early 2000s.
Yeah, it was so early 2000s. I have a funny story from that day, but I'll share it for another time, because I know you got some stuff that you you wanted to get to.
Well, I almost brought it up in the middle of our insecure discussion, the first thing, because this is why we should do 14 minutes of prep for every podcast, is because this was exposed in our 14 minutes of prep. In this past week's episode of You're the Worst, which is a show we, of course, have talked about on many occasions and that we both love, and I think I still love, certainly. The entire episode was about a really wild, like, scavenger hunt thing essentially happening, all to get into a speakeasy bar in Los Angeles.
Correct.
And you told me before we went live, as it were, that you have been to that speakeasy on many occasions, I believe was the way you put it.
Yeah, it was kind of one of my favorite places to go.
All right. So first of all, did you really have to do some sort of scavenger hunt?
No. There was no scavenger hunt.
Man, because I was so excited about the story of how you had to like run all across L.A. answering payphones, and like it was like, you know, an episode of Mr. Robot just to get you into the speakeasy.
Yeah, no, the part that I meant was basically where they wind up and they're like, oh, man. but I will say that
once they get there, it's a very typical speakeasy where just people are being speakeasy-ish.
Yeah, and this place is better than that. I feel like, I don't know, should I reveal the name of the actual place?
I don't know, man. You're the one who has the speakeasy experience. I don't know how any of this stuff works.
All right, so I'll tell you my story of this place. Because the first time I went there was like my first week in L.A. And I got invited to an after party. I believe it was for the band Alt J after their show. It was going to be at this place.
You fancy man, you.
I know. And so we get dropped off. It's this like alley in Hollywood, and you go back, and it's literally there's just a house, and there's a line. It's a house and a line. It's the only way you know is that there's sort of a line, but the line's like in like a little cul-de-sac-y kind of area, and you walk in, and then you go to the door. You know, we get in, we get upstairs, you walk up the stairs, and you go into a room.
So you don't need like a password or anything?
You got to get by the guy at the door, but yeah, there's no password or any of that. You know, a lot of times there's a list that you may need to be on.
Uh-huh.
But whatever.
Fancy.
So I get in and I walk into this room, and there's a woman lying on a bed in like old timey kind of lingerie, you know, like 1940s-ish kind of like lingerie. And she then runs down the rules of the establishment. And so she's sitting there. She gives a bunch of rules that I'm not paying attention because there's a woman in lingerie and I'm going to look at that. Right. And then all of a sudden she kind of finishes up and she's like, okay, welcome. And then she hits a button. The bed slides away. I don't even know where the hell it went, but she just like, like slides away.
She's still on the bed?
On the bed, yep.
So she slides away with the bed.
Yep, slides away with the bed, and underneath the bed is a stairwell. Like, underneath just a staircase.
Damn.
And you walk down the staircase, and then you get there, and there is this whole place. You kind of see it. The place that they come in the show is not the actual place that you come in, but it's not too far. And you come down the stairwell. There was like a band playing. There's like a high wire act going. You've got this huge like old timey bar. There's people making food. It's gorgeous.
Are people dressed up?
People are not dressed up. I mean, some people like dress nice, but they're definitely not like – you know, dressed like steampunks or something. Yeah. You know, and they're serving whiskey cocktails. They're not $20, but, you know, they're also not cheap. And yeah, it was a lovely time, but it was one of those things.
It was a lovely time. Oh, nothing has sold something worse than it was a lovely time. But go on.
I didn't want to get in all the stuff that I got into. I had fun. And the reason I went back is because it is a money place to take a date. You want first or second date? You're like, hey, I know a spot. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's a closer.
Yeah, it's a closer. Jesus.
But yeah, I had a good time. And
if I ever find myself living in Los Angeles, we're gonna have an off-air conversation.
Next time you go, I'll definitely give you the name of the spot for sure. I would recommend it. But it's very LA, and it was one of those things where I realized that it's like, you really have to know somebody to know anything that's happening in this town. Because you would never even know this place is there. You're walking around during the day. And it's like, you know, the time is the place to go to. I don't know if it still is. Because it's L.A. and that stuff changes. But yeah. It is the nature of L.A.
It doesn't exist anymore. Who knows?
It's like you need to hear from somebody who knows from somebody to do the thing. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why people have a hard time breaking into that town.
Yeah, no doubt. That's absolutely the way it goes. Otherwise, you end up at a bar with all the other failed actors.
Yeah, I've done that too. It's also fun. Next time, I'll tell you the story about how we got bumped from our table because Elton John needed it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's like is that an episode of Will and Grace where he's the leader of the gay mafia? Yeah,
that could be.
I think it's Will and Grace. Or it might even have been Friends, but there's an episode of something where like someone who on a sitcom in the 90s or early 2000s who was gay ends up somehow running afoul of the gay mafia or something like that. And Elton John turns out to be the president of the gay mafia. It's really fun.
That's amazing. There also is a speakeasy in Hollywood that you enter through a refrigerator door.
What?
Yeah. It's 70s.
Well, I apparently have not known the right people on my many, many journeys to Los Angeles.
I guess not. All right.
Strangely enough, I did know you for some of those journeys, and yet this is the first I'm hearing of any of this.
Yeah, sorry, holding out on you, I guess. Well, if you've been like, I need a pretentious secret spot to take a date, I would have had two for you.
I know who to call now if I'm ever in that situation.
All right.
So before we go, the other thing I wanted to bring up is some homework.
Okay.
And since it went so well last time, I thought I would once again give you some a lady singing alternative R&B music.
All right.
This one's a little more mainstream, actually. In fact, I can guarantee you've heard of this artist, and you may already have listened to the album. It's Solange Knowles.
Okay, I have not yet listened to the album, but I actually kind of wanted to, so I'm down for that.
I would go so far as to suggest that without attempting to discredit or diss Beyonce in any way, because I think she's wonderful, the far more interesting musical talent in the Knowles family is actually Solange.
Interesting. All right. Well, and, you know, she's been famous for sort of pushing the two of them, pushing the two of their tastes forward. Beyonce, yes. And Jay, I mean, so
yes. And also for physically pushing one of them at one time.
I forgot about that. I wasn't even making that joke, but yes, that's correct.
But this album is excellent, and I would encourage everyone to spend some time in the next week checking it out so that we can talk about it.
I really feel like that elevator incident, by the way, is just one of the more unexamined things. Like,
really? I think it's pretty well examined.
I would watch a documentary, like an hour long. I'd watch a 30 for 30 on what happened in that elevator for sure. Yeah.
I don't think anyone's talking, unfortunately.
I know.
Especially,
but maybe someday.
Now. Like, I think Lemonade might be the closest thing you're getting to a 30 for 30 about the elevator incident.
Maybe that's why I like the record. I don't know. All right, yeah, I'm down to check out Solange Knowles. And again, I would urge you guys to check out Black Mirror. We're not far. I don't remember the exact date that the new episode's dropping, but it's within the next 10 days.
I can answer that question right now.
Yeah, it's within the next 10 days. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that's really soon.
Yeah. So jump on that because we're gonna get into it. I'm going to find the date, though. October 21st. There you go.
All right. So almost exactly 10 days.
Yeah.
9 days.
So you got that much time because we'll jump into at least the first couple, I would hope, for that week's pod. And yeah. Anything else?
No, I feel pretty good about where we're at.
All right. Enjoy your high holy day, sir.
I'll do my best.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the jello is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.